through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Car Toys. This off-season, we have a theme. Me, Tom, and Jake. We have a theme to the off-season, a project. Starting Monday, we're going to look at the first of the Seahawks free agents. It's going to be part of an ongoing series. It's going to start with Seahawks free agency. Then it's going to go to NFL free agency. Then we're going to look at draft prospects. And then we're going to recap the Seahawks draft pick. So it'll stretch out over a couple months. But it starts Monday with the first profile of a Seahawks free agent. Before we get that started, we're going to finalize our off-season blueprint, the three of us, and we're going to be answering a single question. How do the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl in 2020?
And it's really important for us as we're looking at it, and things will change and evolve in terms of, you know, people that we think fit this strategy and all of that. But ultimately, it comes down to a point where we have to be the GMs in this situation, right? For our own blueprint, what do we think are, we came up with five important things. Now, not necessarily in particular order. I think there's one thing that jumps off the page, right, more than anything else. But, okay, when we look at these signings eventually that happen, or when we bring names up into the conversation, do they fit these priorities? And I think that that's kind of the template that we've got to work under as we really sort out what the Seahawks are going to need to do.
Now, when we look at these things, all these priorities that we've got listed here, can we just agree that universally across the board, not just the three of us here, but everybody, every 12 out there agrees that pass rush has got to be number one?
Not even close.
No?
No, I mean, like, nothing else has come close to, like, the consensus agreement than pass rush is number one. It was the one that the three of us had when we separately came up with our priorities. It was the number one response on the text line when we were taking calls earlier this week. It was the number one response on the calls that we had come in. And let's just start with that. Our priorities, let's go through five. We have the five priorities that we're going to get back to. Not only are we getting back to the question of can the Seahawks get to the Super Bowl, but in our opinion, they have to hit on these five things. These five things are the key to get back to a Super Bowl. Number one, pass rush.
And with that pass rush, obviously the first person that comes into mind is Jadeveon Clowney. And whether or not the Seahawks are going to be able to retain him, right? I think that there is some skepticism even within our own show about whether Clowney is the guy that they should be targeting, you know, and really considering going after in their first priority. But ultimately, I think that this is the Seahawks' number one priority, is to get Clowney, and they are going to have to pay him top dollar, but then be able to supplement that along with another top tier pass rusher, someone that's going to cost them anywhere between that $8 to $12 million range, and I think it'll probably be around that 12. You need another elite guy who's had experience and who has a track record of being able to get after the passer.
Let's think about this for a second. With Clowney, you are going to have to pay that top dollar. So let's say the difference between what you pay for Clowney and what you pay for the next level of talent down, is it really worth paying that much more for a guy that I'll grade him a B year? Is it really that much more? Because when I watch him play, I feel like the people who are a little bit skeptical on Clowney, and I'll put myself in that category, the stats don't match up with what my eyeballs saw. I think that that's the problem. If you believe the stats, then you're fine. Then it's like, oh, okay, well, there's no question that, you know, this guy was double teamed and he still racked up these great stats. Okay. But if he was that great, then would we really be having a conversation about how pass rush is such a big need for them? Like, wouldn't that be second or third down the line if Clowney were really as great as everybody says he was?
But he's not guaranteed to be on this roster. I think it's a priority for this team. And even if Clowney was on this roster, I think the reality is that one player does not change your entire pass rush. You got to remember, when Frank Clark had his amazing year, who had another year that was just as good? It was Jaron Reed, who got 10-plus sacks from the defensive tackle position. So your pass rush felt better. And so with Clowney, he's the only guy on that defensive line that consistently was disrupting anything that the opposing offense presented. And he is that top-tier talent. He's that overall player that he isn't just some pass rush specialist. He's a guy that can get it done in the run game as well. So I think that that's the part where you got to factor in is that, you know, Clowney, although he's not this guy who consistently churns out 12, 15 sacks in his career, he does just as much as good in the run game as he does in his pass rushing ability. And complementing him with another guy who can get after the passer, I think will instantly improve this unit.
One player does not a pass rush make. Poetry, I think Shakespeare said that.
That's very true. Very true.
Thank you. Number two, offensive line. Now, before I start with this one, I just want to say the reason that this is higher on the list of priorities, I think they could do with adding not just one pass rusher, but two edge rushers. Pass rush to me is like if you look at kind of a pie of what they need, it's like a third of what they need, and then the other ones kind of rounded out. That's just my opinion. I don't know that we share that entirely, but pass rush is certainly a priority for the three of us. Offensive line is on here at number two. Because of the free agents that they have leaving.
Correct.
Jermaine Ifedi, right tackle. Jermaine Ifedi is a free agent. Mike Iupati is a free agent. George Fant, that extra tackle that they use in blocking situations, is a free agent. You've got Justin Britt, center, who could be a cap casualty. You've got DJ Fluker and Dwayne Brown as also your returners there.
You look at that position, and right now, as it is, you have too many holes. You have too many question marks going into a year when you have a $35 million quarterback who the conversation is around this town and within that organization, I'm sure, is how can we continue to evolve and make Russell Wilson more of the centerpiece of this offense? It doesn't mean he's throwing it 40, 50 times, but making him more of the centerpiece. And if you don't have guys up front that can protect him and that have decent experience in this league, then you're setting yourself up for failure. And they have to be able to establish the line of scrimmage and have a plan. This can be done with, you know, a patchwork group of guys. This could be done signing one elite free agent at the guard or right tackle position and then using an opportunity to draft. But the reality is that they're going to have Dwayne Brown. I would imagine that they're going to try and work out some sort of deal with Justin Britt. Or move on entirely. And then from there, they're going to give Phil Haynes and Jamarco Jones opportunities to compete at one guard position. So I think that there are plenty of holes here that you have to look at and evaluate. And it's going to be interesting to see how they decide to prioritize this and fill it out.
$60 million in cap space. Mm-hmm. If Jadeveon Clowney, if paying big money for him prevents them from being able to spend money on the offensive line. Because as I see it right now, Dwayne Brown is the only thing you can really rely on if you look across those five.
No question.
So you're going to have to draft somebody. And when I say somebody, I mean like somebody's either for depth or somebody to just sort of work their way in quickly. But you're going to have to spend, like, does it have to be huge money? No, but it's going to have to be probably a B-plus or A player. Somewhere along that offensive line, you mentioned cap casualty, Stacey, for Justin Britt. Remember, he's coming back from an injury anyway, so that could take him out of the equation altogether right there. So as I'm looking at this and I'm thinking through it really for the first time, or maybe fourth time, the situation on the offensive line seems more dire to me. I'm not real comfortable with that at all. So maybe now more than ever, I'm thinking, don't sign Jadeveon Clowney. Spend less money on the pass rush so that you have money left over to make sure you can bolster that offensive line. Because you're not going to hit on everybody you draft, but maybe you hit on one guy that can come in and play right away.
And we're going to breeze through these next three, and then we'll get back to these five main things as we go throughout the show. Number three, weapons around Russell Wilson.
Yeah, we're getting weapons around Russell Wilson to me is have to be a priority. Really, specifically at the tight end position and solidifying that position with a guy that you feel very good about, an explosive playmaker, a guy that can be reliable to move the chains. And unfortunately, we'd love to sit here and say Will Disley's that guy, but he's not. Just because of the injury, the injuries that he sustained his first two seasons here in the league. And so to count on him is really foolish at this point. If he can make it through a full season next year, fantastic, and we will love every second of it. But you have to have another guy that can that you can rely on and can be a legit difference maker out on the field. And then the other thing is receiver, their third receiving option. I think they really have to find another guy to go along with Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, to really make this offense as explosive as it can be. And I think that that's a really key point.
Number four is philosophy and scheme. Now, what do we mean by this? Well, it's how they approach the ball, their philosophy. I think primarily we started on offense, right? Do they can they get back to a Super Bowl? Yeah, do they let Russ cook?
Let Russ cook!
All those cooking people.
It's
out
a question
there.
They'll have to answer. Okay. It's they've had the same philosophy and same approach under Pete Carroll, but Russell Wilson is continuing to improve after watching the Kansas City Chiefs win the Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes under center. Do you lean more into the pass? Do you give the ball to Russell Wilson more, or is your approach just fine? Maybe you just need a few more weapons, some better pass protection.
Right, and that's a big part of it. And then defensively, getting aggressive. Right, so those two things. Are you allowing Russell Wilson to be more centric in the offense, or and are you getting more aggressive and more true to what the original approach was for Pete Carroll and this group?
And number five is team speed. Again, we're going to get back into these five kind of main points and our general question of how the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl in 2020 at 2:30. Right now, let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the we got to protect the kids nonsense.
You guys, what about the XFL are you most looking forward to? As a reminder, the Seattle Dragons open the season against the DC Defenders.
Yes.
I think it's 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern.
Saturday. I think the one thing that really stands out to me from the XFL, I'm just excited to see the product. I'm excited to see what it looks like, you know, from the broadcasting standpoint to how they incorporate this unprecedented access that they're talking about from a media standpoint. What are the new rules that are implemented? I think there's just a lot of intrigue. When you look at week one, that's what this new league provides, is intrigue. But then I want to see a good game to keep me coming back and back. So that part is what I'm looking forward to in their inaugural game.
Inaugural.
Did I throw another G in there?
Jake, yeah, that's okay, though.
It's
fine.
It's okay, Jake. It's whatever you want it to be.
I agree with what Jake said. I mean, the entirety of the product is important. I'll say, you know, this week, it's not as big of a deal, but I'm interested in looking at crowds and ratings. Like this, the first week will probably do really well, maybe even the second week. But as we've seen before, with the XFL the first time around and even the AAF, was that last year or 2 years
last
ago?
Last year.
It feels like it was forever.
Yeah, it did fine the first week because everybody was curious. I'm really looking more forward and into weeks probably 2 and 3 just to see if that holds up, if the product is good. The TV product, the on-field product, the game itself, the speed of the game, the rhythm of the game, all that stuff. And, you know, all the gimmicky stuff that they're going to do, extra points, running clock and all that. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well, but I'm most curious to see how the public responds to it.
Again, that'll kick off Saturday, February 8th at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific time. You can check it on ABC. I believe it'll be on the ESPN app or watch it on ESPN. And on Wednesday, we'll have the Dragons Insider at 7 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle, hosted by Lydia Cruz. Question number two.
Number two.
Walter Jones, you know him, told Bob, Dave, and Moore that Dwayne Brown is on his way to being one of the best left tackles ever. Is he?
Well, that's interesting because I think Dwayne Brown is an awesome left tackle in this league, and I think he is a top five tackle in this league. But when you look at Dwayne Brown in terms of his overall history, he has been that mark every single year for the most part in his career. But I don't know if Dwayne Brown is regarded around the league as being one of the greats. And I think that's what it requires to be a Hall of Famer at that position. You know, Jonathan Ogden, no question about him being one of the greats. Walter Jones, no question about that. So when you talk about Hall of Fame, that's a really tough thing to do. I think more so than any other position. When you play offensive line, you've got to be the one or two guy in the NFL every single year, as unfair as that is. I think Dwayne Brown's an amazing player, but I don't know if he's going to end up finishing being a Hall of Famer.
Boy, being on the other side of these questions and not asking them is a lot tougher than you think.
Is it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you know what? When I think about the great tackles of all time, a lot of the time there's a running back to go with him, right? Because he ends up being, part of a good run game. You think of Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson together with Sean Alexander and the great running game that they had. But, you know, guys like Tony Baselli and Willie Rofe, I don't know if Dwayne Brown is atop that list. Orlando Pace. I feel like he's just sort of hitting his stride right now, late in his career, and I'm not willing to put him in the Hall of Fame just yet. But then again, rating a left tackle, a little difficult for somebody like me to do.
Same. That's exactly how I feel. And it's hard to rate a left tackle on an offense where, an offensive line, it's always hard to tell who has what assignment, whose fault is what. And
yeah, but let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Has Dwayne Brown been regarded as one of the top one or two guys every year in the league?
Every year in the league? I don't know about that. Certainly up there.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is I'm not taking anything away from Dwayne Brown. I think Dwayne Brown's an amazing left tackle. But to make it into the Hall of Fame at that position, it is so hard to do because it's the notoriety just isn't there for that position. It's like these names that have to be thrown out there. Like, yes, Walter Jones, without question. Everyone around the league knew that Walter Jones was a dude.
Who's that left tackle now?
You know, that's a good question. I wouldn't say that there's really any guy that really takes that. To me, Andrew Whitworth was a guy who was very much respected all across the league every single year. Now that he's, 38, that's, it's fallen off, for starting this last year in 2019, heading to 2020. But he's a guy that I guess I would point to. But
what about Jason Peters?
Jason Peters, yes. Yeah. Jason Peters is another one. Thank you. He's a guy that I think universally, almost every year, everybody recognized Jason Peters as being one of the true best left tackles in the league.
What about Joe Staley? Is he more like a Dwayne Brown? Where
Joe Staley will be a Hall of Famer.
Or Joe Thomas.
Yeah,
Joe Thomas, Joe Staley. Tyron Smith, but his career is still, he's still got a lot of career left,
yeah,
right?
He's only 29.
Yeah,
425 also texted in with Tyron Smith. That
Smith's
seems to be
a seven-time Pro Bowler already.
Yes, so you're absolutely right, C. Raj, and he'll be another one. So
what of it? I could be two if I wanted to.
But that's the level that you're talking about. And like I said, Dwayne Brown is an amazing football player. But a Hall of Fame at that position is much harder than any of the other skill positions.
Question number three.
Number three.
Get ready for this. ESPN listed their bold offseason predictions for every NFL team. For the Seahawks, it's that they won't re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. For the Rams, it's that they will try to trade Todd Gurley. Which is more likely?
That they'll try?
Try to trade.
Okay, not that they will.
No, but say try. Try to trade.
I think it's far more likely that they will try. So if we're saying try versus execute and get a deal done, I think they will try to trade Todd Gurley.
Wait, yeah. which is more likely, that the Rams try to trade Gurley or that the Seahawks don't re-sign Clowney?
Yeah, I think it's try.
Try to trade Gurley.
His cap number right now is astronomical. And you're talking about a guy who has declined in his play and has declined in his health in a major way. So if they could dump Todd Gurley's salary off of their already strained cap situation, I think that they wouldn't even think twice about it. So it's crazy to say that, because when he's on the field and he's actually healthy, he's an amazing, amazing player. But that deal that they made with him a couple years ago, that turned out to be a not very smart decision.
Tom, how much less sexual does that make the Rams offense?
It depends what they replace him with. If they don't have any replacement, they're asexual. Right? They can't do anything.
You ask us like, right. Yeah, we're right on board with that comparison. I don't even know.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you,
Don't you agree?
I gotta think about, I got to think about this first before I agree with it.
They got the qualities to make a sexual offense.
They're going to have to draft a running back to get them back to sexuality.
I mean, they don't have a lot of draft capital, but I doubt they'd use a first-round pick on one.
They don't even have one, even if they wanted to.
They don't have a first-round pick.
They don't have one for the next 2 years.
Yeah, but you can still find a good running back. It doesn't have to be the first round.
Yeah, it's true.
Chris Carson in the seventh round.
Do they have any draft picks?
They do have some draft picks.
They have some.
They have some.
They're just sitting it out.
Yeah, they'll just sit this one. I don't know. I do think it's possible. So Brady Henderson, Seahawks reporter for ESPN, was the one that wrote in the possibility that they won't re-sign Clowney for ESPN. So that was his prediction, his bold prediction for the season. And the more, maybe it's just that Brady has more recently been on our airwaves. He was on with Danny and Gallant talking about it. But so it's a recency bias, but I feel like the more that I hear it, the more I believe it. I used to think it was more than likely that they would re-sign him, not just because of the cap number that they have, but because it's the biggest need. It's someone that's already been here. He has connections here with a good relationship with Dwayne Brown. He seemed to really like the program, seemed to leave on a good note, despite the fact that they went out in the divisional round of the playoffs. But now I think that that seems like something. The fact that he ended the season without saying, I would love to come back to Seattle, but by saying, I want to play for a contender, certainly makes it seem like he will test the market and it'll be tough for the Seahawks to retain him.
When he says he's willing to play for a contender, it tells me that he's willing to make yet another move. I'm not sure where he's living right now, but we've talked about this before. The degree to which movement around, like when you actually have to physically move your family around the country multiple times within, we'll say, a year or 2 years, that can be straining on you and your family. But if he says he wants to play for a contender, it sounds like he's ready to go somewhere else yet again if the money is right. It's not like it's, hey, I love Seattle so much, I really want them to keep me, but I understand the business. It's, hey, I want to go somewhere where I know I can win now.
It is interesting when you look at it from that perspective, because I would say the same thing, Tom, had I not known that Clowney had made a special effort to go up to John and Pete's office after the season was over and basically just kind of having a conversation with them like, hey, I loved it here and bring me back is basically what the conversation in my interpretation of that was. You still got to show me the money. It's still got to be right, and you've got to prove to me that this defensive line is going to be better and that they're a Super Bowl team. But I loved my experience here, but I'm very much comfortable walking away if you're not willing to prove any of that.
How do the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl? It's the question we'll be asking ourselves all offseason. It's the question we're asking Mike Salk next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Hi, Mike.
Stacey.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
How are you guys
I'm
all doing?
Great.
Friday. Let's go.
It's a great Friday.
Tom's being
it is
a trooper.
Kind of a Friday for everyone but Tom. Tom's ready
for
home,
man.
Tom's getting psyched for a weekend of lying on this couch, miserable with a bunch of blankets
Tom's
over him
in
and
there.
Some
Theraflu. He's hanging in there.
Nah, you know, sometimes you just go to the doctor, you walk away, and you're like, you know what? I feel okay.
Really?
But
you
just
go to the doctor for that?
I just ran up to the urgent care.
Oh, come on.
Here's my conspiracy theory on this.
Yeah.
Okay? Because yesterday Tom brought up a potential trip to Anacortes. Right?
Oh, yeah.
To a hotel, to a dog hotel. Now, this is a very, very well thought out plan here.
No, it's not.
It is a well thought out plan to make sure that this Anacortes trip does not happen.
Oh,
Jake, that trip was supposed to be for next weekend.
Oh.
No, but this is where you're
playing the long game.
You ruined my conspiracy theory.
Playing the long game.
The conspiracy theory, well, the fact is that Tom was trying to think of a way out, and live on air, we were all trying to help you think of lies to get your way out of it.
Nope.
And then I like Jake's theory. I'm assuming it's going to where you plant the seed now that you're deathly ill.
Right, by next week, he has a coronavirus.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but a week later, I can't fake like I'm
you
sick.
You absolutely can. I've done it a million times.
This is the best time to do it. What are we talking about today? What's on the plate?
I'll tell you what.
We laid out a pretty big deal. Before you got here.
Oh, we did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're laying out our off-season blueprint for our project. Again, to remind you guys, we're starting Monday at 2 p.m. with the first of our Seahawks free agent profiles. We're also going to have digital assets, videos on 710sports.com. Before we get all of that going, we're finalizing our off-season blueprint to answer the question, how do the Seahawks get back to the Super Bowl in 2020.
And do you all need to have the same one, or are we allowed to have different blue?
We differ between certain things, okay. But overall, these are things that we all philosophically, or not philosophically, but that we can agree on.
Practically.
Yeah, that practically, you know, this overarching theme we can agree on. So
that sounds great. This country, what I have found recently is that people agree.
Well, yeah.
So this should
really?
Yeah, I mean, basically what I've heard is that everyone out there agrees these days. We're all on one page. Why wouldn't it be the same for the Seahawks offseason?
Here's our priorities.
It sounds great.
Okay, I'm going to read you the five.
Can't miss.
Tell me where you stand.
Okay.
We have, I'm just going to go through them. One, pass rush. Two, offensive line.
Okay.
Three, weapons around Russell Wilson. Four, potential adjustments to philosophy and scheme.
Okay.
Five, team speed.
Yeah, I like one.
You like one? You don't like any of these?
Not really.
I work so
hard
on them.
I'm not saying that they don't belong, but I told you guys yesterday, number one is pass rush, and it's not close. I mean, it's like it's 1A, 1B.
Well, that's literally
why did you make that noise then?
Huh? I was joking.
Oh.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Pass rush number one.
Okay.
After that, tell me the offensive line. Yeah,
you
got to get
be
better
listening.
On the offensive line.
Weapons
yeah,
around you need, Russell Wilson.
Yeah, they have good weapons
philosophy
around Russell Wilson.
Philosophy scheme.
Yeah, their philosophy, especially offensively, is fine.
Team speed.
I mean, yes, I would agree with that one, but that's a little broad. They need a playmaker in the secondary. They need somebody who makes plays on the defensive line by getting after the quarterback, and they need somebody who in the secondary who makes plays, whether it's a corner or safety. The Pete Carroll system, and if you're going to allow the bend but don't break occasionally, you need interceptions. You need to drill somebody as they're coming across the middle and let them know that you can't just do that, or that if they catch the ball, they're going to get hit from behind. You saw that this year at times from Marquise Blair and from Diggs. Now, maybe they don't need to acquire the safety because they think that Blair is going to grow enough from year one to year two. Fine. As long as it means releasing Tedrick Thompson and Lano Hill ASAP, I'm fine with it. Those two guys should not be on an NFL roster, and especially this one. It's not personal. They're just not good. So, okay, if you think Blair and Diggs are going to be the guys, fine. I can roll with that. Pete likes to develop talent. Then find me a corner. I would love for Shaquille Griffin. I know he wants to go chase the best guy around. Here's what I'd like. I'd like another corner as good as him, if not better, who takes the ball away. How many picks does Shaquille Griffin have in 2 years?
Three.
Do you need more than that? Yeah. I don't even know if he has that many, Stacey. I think it's two at the most. I think he might even only have one.
There was one he had in Chicago.
You got to take the ball away. He had one this year that got called back. So, like, dude, you got to take the ball away. He's been a good corner, and his growth from last year to this year was great, but I think you're looking for more out of that number one corner spot, and if it means that Shaquille becomes the off corner and all of a sudden, yeah, mm-hmm. Trey Flowers, maybe you're kind of a sub guy, fine. Or if it means that you have somebody as good as Shaquille who's on the other side and again Griffin becomes a sub, fine. But they're not strong enough in the secondary, and they don't get enough pressure on the quarterback. And those two things, I think, are substantially more important. It's not that I wouldn't want help at those other things. I just think that the defensive line and the secondary are just more important.
I don't want to brag, but Kyle did just confirm that I was correct.
Oh, good.
Three
Shaquille
career
Griffin
picks.
Has three career picks.
But in the I think I said in the last 2 years.
Including two in one game against the Bears.
Now, he had one in the last game of his rookie year, correct?
Correct.
There you go.
There is a thought process there that a Seahawks,
week 16 versus
a better Seahawks pass rush
about her own job.
A better Seahawks pass rush immediately helps that secondary. Do you buy into that? Do you buy in that if they stand put, that they will improve?
Yes.
As they get
enough.
Better in pass rush,
I do believe it will help, and I do believe year two of Marquise Blair will help, and year two of Quandre Diggs will help, and I still think they need more. And I think that outweighs what they need. Because, look, they probably need some more speed at linebacker as well. You talk about team speed. I mean, it's not that I disagree with you on team speed. I just think you got to be specific. Okay, where? Mm-hmm. Where do you need that speed to be upgraded? Linebacker is probably one of those spots now as well, which is funny because you went into last year thinking you had the best linebacking core maybe in the business. And a year later, you're looking at it and going, yeah, all this base package stuff, and they got kind of picked apart. The speed at linebacker wasn't as great as you wanted it to be.
So I don't want to skirt around the issue in terms of when you point to the linebacker spot. You're not getting ready Bobby Wagner. Michael Kendricks is out. So to me, the one person that you're pointing to is K.J. Wright.
Probably.
And so if K.J. Wright, I don't think that they're keeping him to be a backup. So if you're bringing somebody else to add team speed, then the person that you're releasing in this situation is KJ Wright.
And I don't say that with malice. KJ is one of the great all-time guys.
All-timer.
And he's in this building often. He goes on with G on Cairo Radio. I mean, I like KJ personally, professionally. He's been a great player. And quite frankly, it's not that I'm looking to get rid of him. If he was back for another year, I wouldn't have a problem. I just agree that you need more team speed. You just got to be faster.
And that's the part where I look at it and say, I don't disagree with you from that team speed category. I just think that this organization looks at it and says, look, Bobby and KJ had pretty good production. KJ showed coming off a year of injury that he's going to stay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if they're going to do that, then all right, now
but
you can
you
allocate
better,
some other
better
other
make
places.
Some changes at defensive end, defensive line, and in your secondary in order to make up for some of that. Okay, yeah, maybe KJ has enough speed left if you can get to the quarterback. But if the guy's sitting around back there patting the ball five times and counting to 20 while you're counting Mississippis on the offensive defensive line, you know, KJ, nobody can stay with anybody for that long. I you know, you watch Rasheem Green and you're going one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three. Like, no, you just can't do that. You don't have time.
Think Taiwan Walker makes any sense for the Mariners?
I'm sure he's a flyer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Mariners are in a position to be taking flyers.
I think now more than ever.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton of downside to it, especially if you get them on a longer-term deal. Like, hey, well, we'll give you a tryout year, and we get one more year after that. And if you can, you know, he was throwing like 85, 86, I guess, in the recent test that he took. So, you know, showcase, that's not enough for time. I mean, Taiwan Walker was effective in the mid-90s. I don't know how effective he's going to be in the mid to high 80s, but if he can get back into that 93 range, I think you could see something from him. There's no downside to it. You like him. You like what he's got. And you're in a position where you can't really do anything wrong, right? I mean,
nope.
If he's bad, oh well. Like, you're not supposed to be good. So, okay. That's what you're doing with Wei-Yin Chen, right? I mean, they've liked him for a while. In fact, there was a good chance he was going to come here before he ended up going to Miami this last time. Thank God it didn't happen because he was not
he's
good
been
once
brutal.
He went to Miami. But you know, he's another guy where, yeah, if he could bring back some of the form he had a few years ago, cool. There's a few other guys like that out there. Aaron Sanchez is out there. He had a good year a few seasons ago, and he might be an option. What's his name? Danny Espinosa?
Yeah. Or, no, Salazar.
Danny Salazar. Sorry, that's what I meant. Danny Salazar, who was with the Twins, I think, a few years ago.
And I think Matt Harvey's another one.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't think I'd mess around with that just because of the whole chemistry thing. Like, if you're trying to develop a group of youngsters,
yeah.
I don't think having the Dark Knight here is what anybody wants. Out there partying. Plus, he's not coming out here. That guy won't leave like the Eastern Seaboard if he can help it. So I wouldn't mess around with Matt Harvey. But some of those other guys, there's no reason not to take a chance on them. They come fairly cheap. You're hoping to just take a flyer. But yeah, why not?
The Sports Star of the Year Awards were last night. Mike, you were there, right?
I was there.
You want to stick around and recap it for us?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Go soccer.
We'll do that next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Sports Star of the Year Awards were last night, MTR Western 85th Annual Sports Star of the Year Awards. Mike, you were there. I hear that Paul Gallant has a new best friend.
He and the Graz are going to start a buddy cop comedy,
it is
I believe,
the
after
unlikeliest
seeing them together.
Pairing I ever thought.
They were so
see.
Funny together. I'm not sure they'd ever met. I mean, they must have met, obviously, but I don't think they've spent any time together. So we had three tickets as a station. I went with Paul and with Graz.
Yeah.
And they started hanging out during the cocktail reception, and the three of us ended up sitting together. They were next to me. And they had to be asked to be quiet because they were both giggling so loudly.
At the reception?
Yes, at each other. Like, you know, like people are talking up on,
like
they're accepting awards
friends,
for like battling cancer. And the Graz and Paul are just like cackling in the back.
Such an odd couple.
They were a riot. Together.
I also heard that you met my friend.
Your friend? I met your roommate.
My roommate.
So let's be clear about what happened at the MTR Western Sports Star of the Year Awards at the after party, so to speak.
Okay.
I walk over to my good friend Rob, who mm-hmm. was standing with a woman named Katie.
Yes, my best friend.
And she said, oh, you work at 710. You must know Stacey Rost. And I said, well, of course I do. And she goes, oh, wait, you're Salk. Oh, my God. Wow. You're so much younger than I guess I thought you'd be. Which was nice, right? She looked young.
A compliment,
I
mean, sure.
That's very nice. I'm going to be 42 here in a couple of months. I thought that was a very nice thing. But then I realized the only way she has any idea who I am is due to her roommate. And the way her roommate talks about me would be her only sense of how old I am.
It's not
which
true.
Means Stacey's like having these conversations like, oh, Saul came in with his cane today and a limp because he could barely walk. Oh, this old man with his gray hair. And it's like, that's
Saul had oatmeal for breakfast, lunch, and dinner at work. It's so weird.
Saul took out his dentures today to do this, to do his 12:30 hit.
That's not true. I called her before the show started, put her on speakerphone, and she explained that it's just because a lot of people in her family listen to sports radio, and they all know who you are, so she assumed that you had been a long-standing voice in Seattle sports. Wow. So she thought that you were going to be like a very tenured,
like a luminous figure. Obviously.
Yeah,
it was a great night. Artiel stopped speaking from last year right at the end, which was good. That speech is now wrapped up. So that one's over, and we can all now kind of move forward from last year's Sports Star of the Year award. Angie Mentink, I would say, was the highlight. Angie won the Keith Jackson Award for her service to broadcasting, career service to broadcasting.
Is she popular in this town? I couldn't quite tell.
Right?
It's unbelievable. Angie's like the... I mean, she's the best,
isn't she?
Everyone.
Because there's nobody who doesn't love Angie. And they were showing some of the old videos.
And if you don't say it to my face.
Right. Well, they show the...
We'll settle this.
They show some old videos of her. I mean, she played football in high school, right? And then they were showing some of the videos of her playing softball at UW. And then her swing and just fielding when she was playing baseball with the Silver Bullets, the women's traveling team. I mean... Dude, she's legit. Her swing is awesome. She was such a good athlete, broke barriers, and then just, how comfortable and confident she is on Root Sports. She is such a good interviewer, such a good studio host. She's a great analyst. She knows as much about baseball as anybody else on that station, and that's not a rip job on anybody else. She's just that knowledgeable. I think the world of Angie. We've had her in a few times just to hang out with her, and you can just sit around listening to her tell stories because they're a riot, so... She just drew enormous applause last night. That was really cool. The Schneiders, John and Tracy, were also recognized with the Paul Allen Award for their service and what they've done with Ben's Fund and Autism. I'm sure they'll be in here in a couple of weeks, right? Because that event is usually coming up not too long from now, right? In April?
Beginning of April, usually.
Yeah, so they'll be in, I'm sure, in a little bit to promote that. And it's an awesome event that they do in Bellevue. But they're great. And anytime Tracy's the best. I love Tracy Schneider, John's wife. And she just carries herself with a grace and an elegance and just the way she speaks about finding out that your son has been diagnosed with autism and what that means and how she wants to help families with it. She's just awesome. And I thought those two moments were, as they often are, the ones that really stood out from the night.
A couple other winners. The top story of the year went to the Sounders winning the MLS Cup.
And you can hear that based on the coverage it got on the station. I would say that was the story of the year for 710, don't you think? Like, we spent the most time on it.
It was a huge
probably
story.
Probably to a lot of Sounders fans.
Not enough to a lot
all
of Sounders fans.
All seven of
fans.
Those texts are going
to
come in
no,
now.
No, not enough time to Sounders fans, but it was a huge story.
Did they beat the U.S. Greek Americans this year
beating
again?
Beating Toronto 3-1 before a record crowd at CenturyLink Field.
Toronto.
I think more people were at CenturyLink Field for that than they are at a Seahawks game.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Sold out crowd.
Well,
that is not true.
Yes. I'm there for every home game.
Like, I was about to tell Mike to pipe down.
No.
That is just
I think
not
it beat
true.
It by like 1,000 people.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm there for every single home game.
It's crazy.
Every single home game, they announce the attendance at Seahawks game, and it's always around 69,000.
Right.
The capacity is, I think, just below 70,000. I think it did beat that capacity.
Wow.
Just
big
saying.
Day. It was a big day.
How can sold you beat the crowd. Capacity?
It happens.
No,
there's people
up
on the roof.
No, they beat that.
Because don't they have like 45 people out on the field at the same time when they play that
that's
sport?
That's not what it is.
Are you sure?
Yes.
All right.
Now I refuse to be wrong.
All right. I believe you. I'm sure they had a lot of people there. I'm sure 6 or 7 of them even paid attention to what was happening in the game.
A female athlete was Sis Bates of UW softball. We had a lot of people when we were going over some of the candidates for this. I think the most popular text response was for Sis Bates.
I can see that. Yeah, she brought down the house last night. She was not there, but when she accepted it through video, that was a big moment.
Hold on. There was something that just got brought to my attention. I have to say this with you guys here right now.
Okay.
Gil Brandt.
I can already tell.
Gil Brandt, who is
Sports Star of the
who,
Year.
Who is, just, I'm sorry for this transition, but this is absurd.
Gil Brandt, I just want you to know.
Gil Brandt just came out with a article that said the title is NFL's Most Clutch Players Right Now. Patrick Mahomes tops the list. Okay. So Patrick Mahomes in 2019 is in Gil Brandt's mind, number one most clutch player. Where do you think Russell Wilson ranked in this list? There's 12 people that
is Gil Brandt the guy who needed them to start over again when they were on TV?
No, that's Charlie Casserly.
That's Casserly.
Another like geriatric NFL analyst. Yes.
And that was a legit question. I confused Gil
Brandt just
and Gil Brandt.
Not too long ago, Hall of Famer,
right?
GM, now contributor to NFL, NFL.com, all of that, long time. Okay. Where do you think Russell Wilson ranks?
Well, Patrick Mahomes is number one. I would say that Russell Wilson is probably number two or three.
You would think, right? Now, Watson, Lamar, Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, George Kittle, Michael Thomas, Quentin Nelson, guard from Indianapolis Colts, Aaron
clutch?
Donald.
How can you be clutch?
TJ Watt, Stephon Gilmore.
He never allows interior defensive linemen to come up with sacks in the final two
Number
minutes.
12, Jamal Adams. And then, oh, by the way, then there's an honorable mention.
Sure.
Honorable
Russell's
mention.
There.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10,
He's
11.
He's got to be number one.
Honorable mentions, and Russell Wilson's name is nowhere to be found.
Who are those guys?
Not clutch.
What are we doing?
Well, you remember he threw that pick in the Super Bowl. So,
clutch.
That's
gotcha.
It. It's just that.
It is weird that the top players 1 through 3, one through five, but much less 1 through 3 wouldn't be all quarterbacks.
But Deshaun Watson's more clutch or Lamar Jackson's more clutch than Russell Wilson?
I'm just saying, why would you
that
have
just doesn't
George
make
Kittle
any sense.
In there? As, I think George Kittle's great. I think he'll rightfully get a huge contract
year.
From San Francisco this year. But how is a tight end going to be more clutch than a franchise quarterback in a game-winning situation?
This is the most absurd thing I've
There's
ever seen.
Maybe he just
forgot.
On
Gil Brandt's like 1,000 years old. Maybe he just forgot.
He just forgot, Russ?
Yeah.
Well, maybe. I mean,
legitimately.
He listed almost everybody else in the NFL except for Russell Wilson.
And let's go back to the 2012 draft and see what Gil Brandt had for Russell Wilson. And if he's one of those guys who just thinks that he's too short and it doesn't matter what he does, forever and ever, Gil Brandt will believe Russell Wilson is too short.
I mean, that has to be it. There's no logical explanation how this guy is not either one or two on this list next to Patrick Mahomes.
He's too short to be clutch.
Unbelievable.
Speaking on behalf of petites, Russell Wilson deserves to be in there.
I don't know if I would call Russ petite.
Mike, thank you.
Certainly not in the offseason.
All right, let's wrap this thing
up.
See you guys.
Danny O'Neill's coming up next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.